Well, I'm Steve. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
Oh, that's going to be a problem. And I'm really grateful that my sponsor asked me to give my story. I gave my story before, and other people have heard it, and I'm glad I can do an update to it. And today I had a really interesting day, and let's see, I met Cindy and Ann, Shadow, Sandra, Valentine, Black Beauty, Sally, Roxy, and Allie, and about 20 other people over that. I was working at the the Cherokee County Humane Society, their thrift store. And Ann and Cindy were actual people. One was a vet. And Shadow, Sandra, I spent most of the day with cats. And it was really a good experience. The company I'm working for authorized me to work there. I'm on light duty. On the 1st of February, a guy fell off a ladder on my head and knocked my head into my neck, and I've been on medication. I didn't take any medication today because I knew I was speaking. And but it's all authorized from my doctor. I took some ibuprofen, that's all. But my pain is at a reasonable level. And I didn't want to cancel because it's really important for me to share my story today. I was born in Chicago. I'm going to try to stick with the guidelines of what it says, you know, and how it works, you know, our experience, strength and hope, and, you know, what it was like and what happened and what happened then. I'm going to try to keep it to 15 minutes on each one. You know, I'm 55 years old now, and I could ramble on, you know, just on my drinking career and all the crazy stuff that happened. And anyway, I was born in Chicago. I had two older brothers, Rick and John, and a younger brother, Joe, and two sisters, Janice and Joan. And it truly was a great upbringing. My dad was an accountant for a railroad out of Joliet, AJ&E Railroad. It's owned by U.S. Steel. But he had a college degree, and it was like something out of a Norman Rockwell kind of thing, where, you know, Thanksgiving, birthdays, the whole family, everyone got together. And my parents, I've never seen my dad even tipsy or drinking in his whole life. And my mother, one time I saw her, they play bridge, they're bridge masters, and they came home one time and she was a little bit, she had two or three cocktails probably. She might only have one, I don't know. But there was no drinking. They would entertain and have a full bar there. And my two older brothers always followed every rule that there was, and everyone was very well behaved. And I kind of, from a very young age, was the problem child. I was always getting stitches and broken bones and just a wild, and I never felt, though, that, you know, I didn't fit in. I always felt like, I think I had a big ego even as a child. I was kind of funny. I broke into the principal's office in grade school. I went to 8 years at a Catholic grade school. And they would do the paddling, of course, and break your fingers or hit your knuckles with the steel edge of the ruler. They paid extra, of course, you know, it put us to, I was the only one that did 8 years at a Catholic grade school, but they paid that extra money because they didn't think public education, you know, showed discipline. And like I was saying, I broke into the principal's office, and I looked at my records, one of 100 things that I shouldn't have done. But I had an IQ in 1 year, 142, another year, 139. And they would always put on my report cards that I didn't work to my potential, whatever that meant. And I was always getting in trouble. As an altar boy, I got caught stealing money in the sacristy. Well, I had done it about 8 times. I was buying my friends food at A&W Root Beer. And Mark Villamec, he narked on me, and He snitched. He turned out to be a lawyer. He's at a law firm. But I felt horrible about that, and I got dismissed. I couldn't be an altar boy anymore. And one of my other friends, Tony Darguzes, his father owned the Hilltop, a bar in my hometown of Oak Forest. I didn't grow up in Chicago. I grew up in Oak Forest. And we used to clean the bar on Sundays. It couldn't open until noon. And never drank alcohol there, though. Never was tempted. And I didn't smoke. And then at, when I was 14, at my Uncle Hank, my godfather's house, was the first time I had a beer. And he had them, you know, just like in a refrigerator downstairs. And I thought, well, I should at least try one, see if I like it. And I had a couple. I had to sneak it, and I didn't tell anybody, but that was my first taste of alcohol. And when I was 15, I had this crazy idea, partially because of that Hilltop. My friend Tony Darguzzi used to take his dad's car when his dad was passed out drunk, and we would drive in the back roads. And anyway, I got a gallon of wine one time from a friend of mine, Steve Ricott, and it was pretty strong wine. But anyway, I had this idea, you know. My parents are gone playing bridge. So I went to my mom's purse and stole the keys. And we took the car for a joyride, and it had a clutch. And I didn't really know how to use that too good. And honest to God, on the radio, we had the radio up full blast. The song Wipeout came on. And I was going, and I'm going back and forth the wheel, and it was a big station wagon. It's going back and forth. It was only about 6 months old, and it started getting into that fishtail, and I was going 70. But anyway, when I lost control of it, and sideways hit a tree going about 55 when I hit the tree, and the whole thing was, you know, came to a peak like this, and it was sideways. And Steve Ricott was in the front seat, and he had a concussion. And I got out of the car. The music stopped when I hit that tree. And and I got out, and I thought, oh, my, this is like a nightmare, you know. And one of the popular songs was Yesterday, All My Troubles Seem So Far Away. And this is, like, blaring in my head real loud. And I'm dragging him with it. He's got a concussion. And I dragged him out of the car. I thought maybe it would light on fire or something. And a cop goes coming by and just keeps going. And I'm like, he must not have noticed that I hit this tree. It was in the ditch, of course. The tree was, but I thought to myself, you know, I really fucked up, you know, and I'm still drunk. And anyway, it's weird, you know. He woke up, Steve Ricott, when I was dragging him for a couple blocks, and he didn't want to be involved. He said, I'm going to tell my parents I hit my head on a fire, one of those fire hydrants. Yeah. And but anyway, I walked home, and it was about a mile, and that song kept going, Yesterday, All My Troubles Seemed So Far. But anyway, my parents, once I got home, I told my older brother, and he freaked out, called my mom, and they got home after a half hour, and they went to see the car, and they thought maybe it wasn't that bad. And my dad wanted to kill me, you know. He's like just freaking out. My mom's, John, you know, relax, you know, don't take it out on him, and don't hit him. And you know, they never really, they weren't bad parents. They were good parents, you know. But anyway, I don't want to spend too much time on this whole story. I got grounded for 3 months, but everyone at school thought I was really cool. And my parents didn't, there was no alcoholism in the family. Later, I found out that my mother's father, my grandfather on her side, he drank, but she was too young to really know if it was an excess. And this is really jumping ahead, but, you know, is AA for you 12 questions only you can answer? Question 7 says, has your drinking caused trouble at home? And I honestly said, no, it hasn't. You know, and just that one example could show, you know, that I really... just in that instance with my home, I rationalized, you know, I've got two daughters, you know, they're 30 and 31 now, and I just didn't think that alcoholism that it caused me that problem, or I couldn't be honest with myself is what it really came down to with that. But thinking back just on little things like that, I've heard so many people tell their story, especially in the last year. I've gone to a lot of speaker meetings, and you know, it's just baffling how so many other stories too. You know, I should have realized at a lot younger age, you know, the problem that I did have when it came to alcohol. You know, I was thinking too when doing my story about all these transparent overlays, you know, like with the geographical maps, you know, and you can flip this thing, or on the anatomy of a body, you know, here's the lymphatic system. You know, you could go through all these different overlays in my life, and I've had a lot of great achievements. And when I start talking about what I've done when I was drinking and not realizing how serious of a problem this was, you know, it really, when I hear other people share their story, it brings back more nightmarish. You know, we're not supposed to dwell on remorseful, terrible things in our past. I think I was going to have my big book right here. But, you know, in the morning meditation, page 88, 89, says, you know, no morbid reflections on the past and that. But every time I hear other people's story, I sit there and something else or two or three things more come up in my head, like that story, just, you know, that one story. There's 100 more like that. You know, it's really... But with the overlay, you know, I could paint a picture of my life that's really great, and you'd think, what accomplishments and all this. But when it came to alcohol, I was just defeated totally. That's just one example. Like I said, at the age of 20, I was at a ZZ Top concert and fell out of the second balcony onto the right behind the stage. And broke my wrist in 5 places. I never drank peppermint schnapps after that. I just thought it was the schnapps. But I was trying to get to the... If I could have got from the second balcony to the first balcony, then you could sneak onto the main floor and get up front. This is at the Chicago Stadium. And that made the news, you know, like, well, during the concert, they didn't know if it was part of the concert, that it was staged, because I fell right behind. And security took me. I remember security taking me, and they threw me outside. That was February 19th, 2 days ago, and 35 years ago. And they threw me out in the cold, and it was like 24 below with the wind chill. And I was hiding under a car, and a cop came with a flashlight. What are you doing under there? I said, they threw me out of the concert. And yeah, I had my wrist in a cast, and then it got really stupid after that. Arthur Wirtz owned the stadium. I tried suing him for throwing me out, you know. And he's with the Chicago mob and stuff, and that was just ridiculous for me. Even I'm going to take on the mob now, you know. And then, anyway, I could go on with all these. At 30, I fell down an elevator shaft. I was sober, though, and it happened at work. And I had a real bad back injury, and I was partially paralyzed for a year and a half. I couldn't feel my left leg, and I had a disc protruding into my neural canal, which is a spinal cord injury. They couldn't operate, blah, blah. And they gave me painkillers. I couldn't take painkillers. But that gave me an excuse to really drink, because when I drank, that pain went away. And my alcoholism was really bad before that accident, but after that accident, it took a year and a half before I was released to light duty work, and a very boring period of my life. But yeah, it happened on the job. I was working on a skyscraper downtown Chicago, fell 27 feet, and that wasn't alcohol related really, because I was, you know, sober at work, but the outcome of it just made my alcoholism get worse. I had already crossed these lines, you know, as far as drinking in excess, but I still didn't know anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, and no one in my family, and alcohol did kill the pain. And anyway, I'm instead of me rambling, I had some notes. during this time of drinking, it's important to point out here, I moved to Florida when I was 17, and I partied at the Rec Bar in Daytona Beach. I lived there for like 5 months, and I met Molly Hatchet and their band, and I was with their entourage and stuff for a while, and got along great with them. I lived in seven states before. Georgia is the seventh state I lived in. And I had favorite bars. This was kind of like, I haven't heard anyone say this in their story ever, but, you know, I there's so many different bars, but I always got to find the best bars. And in Florida, I did like research into bars. I was a real bar jumper. But the Rec Bar in Daytona Beach was really great. In Chicago, they had a bar called The Zoo that was a biker bar, and there was a fight every half hour, minimum one per hour. And if you felt really crazy, I used to let go in there. The bar, the Hilltop, turned into Footloose. And when it was Footloose, one time I pulled in there, and I was with this girlfriend of mine. She was real cute. She was about 10 years younger than me, and there was... I never had a cover charge when I went to that bar. Me and my entourage, we would all just, the bouncers, oh, come on in. But this one time I pulled in, and this is in my hometown, which is the only town I'm not really allowed in anymore. I can go anywhere in the world except my hometown. And I should have left that hometown sooner. In 1988, in November, I pulled in there, and I backed in, and I was drunk, and I had some white powder, party powder stuff, and I backed in, and me and this girl, we were going to do some, and a squad comes flying in at like 40 miles an hour and stops right in front of my car, and I was backed in, so I took it and put it in a cigarette pack, put it down my pants, and six more squads show up, the chief of police and everything, and they searched 45 minutes through the whole car, through her purse, and I'm bitching at them up a storm. What the hell? You can't be searching her purse or searching her. And they didn't have dogs, thank God. But I looked down, I could see the whole pack of cigarettes, you know, in the outline of my tight pants. And I've never been busted for drugs. Drugs isn't really a part of my story. It's something I did when I was drinking, if it was there, and I never made money off selling drugs, but it was, you know, definitely keep you awake longer so you can party more. But anyway, I bitched the cops out, and they had to pull me aside and tell me, hey, you know, what kind of work you do? And I told them, and they're like, do you like someone standing over your shoulder telling you how to do your job? And I'm like, no. And they're like, then please just stay right here while we do our work. And after they let us go and didn't find it, and I was drunk. They could have gave me a DUI. You know, they weren't interested in that. Someone again had narked on me because I was having too much fun, I think. But anyway, I went in the bar and, like a complete idiot, got more drunk and was loudmouthing how stupid those cops were. After that, I got pulled over every week, and because I got back to the police. And one time, less than a month after that, the officer across the street from my parents, Steve Lipinski, stopped me, and I wasn't in a good mood. I was having a fight with that, a verbal discussion with that girlfriend of mine that was 10 years younger than me. Wow, that was really a horrible relationship. It only lasted 6 years. But the cop stopped me and said, hey, you went through that red light. I said, no, I didn't. I stopped when it was red. When it turned green, I went through. And I did. I know I did. He says, well, I'm going to have to give you a ticket for going through a red light. He says, step out of the car. And so I stepped out of the car and I grabbed him. And I grabbed him by the... And I said, would you please quit fucking with me? And I took him and I threw him in the ditch. I was really pissed off, and I thought, you know, that maybe he'd just quit fucking with me. And I That reminds me of, you can't unring a bell. And someone was talking about a New York minute. There's people in jail and prison for 10, 20 years for something they did in 1 minute. In a New York minute, any kind of minute you want to call it. But you can't unring that bell, and you can't take back something that you did. And I paid for that. I was sitting behind bars very shortly thereafter with an entire police force coming in ridiculing me. And I don't even want to tell you what they said. But they won that. I fought the law, and I don't know. I really don't know what was going through my mind. I thought I was cool, but it really wasn't. And let's see. All right, I'm going to try to stick to my script here a little bit, because we're going to run out of time if I don't. Here we go. All right. Well, I was talking about in St. Cloud, Minnesota, I had two favorite bars, the Press Bar and the Red Carpet Inn. These were great bars if you're ever up there. I know we're not drinking, but they still have good bands, and they have, and then in Wisconsin, Bubba Louie's, and I used to play softball for the Blue Bunny. They had 50, I even cut this out here. Wisconsin, states with the highest binge drinking rates. Wisconsin is number one with 25.6%. I moved to this town there. Before I moved to Georgia, that was the last town I lived in. They had 57 drinking establishments for a town of 20,000 people. And the best two bars I just mentioned, the Blue Bunny and Bubba Louie's. I got a jacket that says Bubba Louie's. That was just like the zoo in Chicago. It was a fight once an hour. If you wanted some action, it was like sitting at home, oh, this is boring. But anyway, I lived in Wisconsin and got in a lot of trouble there too. But I'll start at the beginning. In 1980, my first DUI, this kind of ruined everything and made my anticipation, my expectations were strongly influenced by my first DUI in Fargo, North Dakota. I was driving, and I could only see like that big out of my windshield because it was with windshield, it was like 40 below. And cops stopped me and said, "Hey, you can't be driving. You can't even see out your windshield." I said, "I can see. I can look out." He says, "Just sit there." Pull over, sit there, and let your whole windshield defrost. And I had a 350 engine in, and everything ran great. And anyway, I was kind of in a hurry. And I left after 5 minutes. It wasn't, it hadn't even moved maybe that big. And he stopped me and gave me a DUI. And he says, "Here's your ticket." He says, "You got to be in court tomorrow." And I'm like, "Okay." And I went to court the next day in Fargo, and judge said $50 fine, and I said, "I don't have $50." He says, "Well, can you get it?" I said, "Yeah, in Minnesota, it's right on the border." So he said, "Okay, go get the money and come back." I said, "Oh, okay," and I did not pay that $50 as the principal of the thing, and it didn't go on my record. It was nothing. But anyway, in 1995. And that was my first one in 1980. 95, my dad got me out of jail. I didn't even recognize him when he got me out of jail. We got off work at McCormick Place in Chicago, and I was just going to buy one round, and it turned out to be the 21st round. Every time, and they were all drinking faster than me. I was drinking, I had 20, 21 beers, and I bought a round, and I left, and I got cut off on the interstate on Dan Ryan, and my whole rear end of the car got ripped off, and I kept trying to jack it up and fixed the flat tire. And after about 20 times, a cop stopped me and said, "What are you trying to do?" And he brought me in for observation. And I said, "Are you going to charge me with something or not?" After about an hour and a half, he says, "Do you want me to charge you with something?" I said, "Well, I got to get home and get some sleep. I got to work tomorrow." And anyway, I got locked up. And I called my dad, and I didn't recognize my dad when I walked right by him. He's like, "Steven." And that was kind of embarrassing. 1988 was my third one with that officer, Steve Lipinski. 89, I got driving on a suspended. 1990, I got driving on a revoked. Those are both, that's three majors in 5 years, license gone. So then, anyway, I'm still on what happened. Let me see what happened here. Oh, damn. All right, I need to move on to... I went to jail in 1991 for a week. After 72 hours, they let me out. They lit my bed on fire at that place when I was sleeping at 3 in the morning. And they lit all the other white guys' beds, too, on fire. There was only four others. And I got out of there, and you know, the first thing I did every time I got out of jail was get a 12-pack or a case of beer and say, you know, damn, glad that's over. But anyway, 1993 in Wisconsin, I got another DUI. Well, I moved to Wisconsin because they don't care about Illinois. They hate each other, the two states, and the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Bears. It sounds stupid, but it's the truth. Wisconsin does not recognize anything Illinois. So I moved to Wisconsin. They gave me a driver's license and said, said there you go. And but I couldn't drive in Illinois at that time on it. And I got a ticket in 93. By two cops that were like in their 20s, and they had this horrible music on. It wasn't even acid rock or you know, heavy metal or nothing. It was just terrible, and they had me locked in the squad car, driving me nuts. And anyway, I had to do a week in jail, but I got, oh, I had a lawyer on that one, and he said for $2,500 to get me out of it. And finally, after 7 months, they said, you're guilty. And my lawyer's like, well, you know, that stinks. You know, I thought for sure I'd get you. I said, you promised me. You promised me you'd get me out of that. And he did promise me that. And anyway, he finally just said, you know, there is no justice. This is a true story. He says, there's just us. And I was out the money, and then I went to jail. And kind of pissed me off. Oh, I paid him $10 a month for 11 years. I put down $1,600, and the last $900 took 11 years. Which was all right. It was the principal. Okay. I wish I didn't make all these notes. I can't follow any of them anyway. So, finally, let me get to this good part where, well, the state of Illinois in 1991 ordered me to go to the dummy classes, the DUI classes and that, and that led to me having to go to my first AA meeting, which I went to at Five Kings Pub on Archer Avenue. And Archer Avenue, it's between Pulaski and Western. We all know where that is. By Midway Airport. And first meeting, and it was real nice. It was like a lot of nice women there, and it was in a pub on a Sunday morning. All the bars were closed, and I went there, and they gave me a big book free, because all newcomers get a free big book. They usually raffle one off or whatever. But anyway, I'm glad I didn't rehearse at home, because who wants to hear me read this drab stuff? That's funny. I can't follow this at all. I don't know where I'm at. But anyway, what it's like now, I started going to meetings there and decided that I'm not an alcoholic. that wasn't for me, and that, you know, I drink like normal people, I thought, and But then, and then I moved to Wisconsin, and in Wisconsin I got another DUI. And January 1st, 1994, all my friends had a New Year's resolution. They're going to quit drinking, all of them but me. And by the 4th of January, half of them had started drinking. And by the 7th, they all had started drinking again. And on the 8th, I decided I'm quitting drinking. And I had been exposed to AA through the court system. And I had been ordered to go to AA meetings in Illinois. And I was going through the same shit in Wisconsin because I got a DUI in 1993 there. And another thing that led up to it, this good friend of mine got murdered at the end of December of 1993. Yeah, his girlfriend stuck a knife, one stab right through his heart, and the knife came out his back. He was my best friend. We had saved these kids from drowning in the river. They were underwater for 3 minutes. We made the front page of the paper, and it was a horrible thing. She was drinking, and she got 8 years. I had to testify. I was subpoenaed, and that really shook me up. You know, he was only in his late 20s, and what a way to end a life. You know, it was really... it was really scary to me because, you know, I was such close friends with these people. And I had to testify against her. And it was just a horrible thing. You know, she didn't mean to kill him. She was just pissed off. And the knife came out his back. God, it's like just unbelievable to me. So I started... going to meetings seriously and picked up my first white chip in 1994 on January 9th. And things got better. I did end up, like I said, going to jail 15 months after my last DUI. And Wisconsin revoked my license. I interestingly got two tickets in the mail after I was sober for a whole year. Two felony charges for using my car as a weapon and causing great bodily harm to someone after a volleyball game one morning. And I got out of that, and they just dropped it to a disorderly conduct. But it's like, you know, this is insane. I thought, tickets in the mail a year after an incident? I had been interviewed. But anyway, those turned out to be felony charges. It was a felony disorderly conduct. They didn't tell me that till later on. I'm like, I don't have any felonies on my record, but they one felony for disorderly conduct. I didn't know you could have a disorderly conduct felony. But that's my only felony that I know of. It's, in Wisconsin, you can do that. Johnny shaking his head. So anyway, I started going to meetings. I only picked up that one white chip and moved here. And after having a year and 10 months sober, didn't start any new relationship. That was when I broke up with that crazy six-year relationship with that woman. She kept on using and drinking and writing bad checks, stealing my checks, and I couldn't cover them. And she went to jail, and it's horrible to see her life the way it disintegrated from when I first met her to 6 years after I met her. I feel partially responsible. But no, my life was pretty bad then, and I built things back up and stayed sober, and 9 years, 6 months, and 2 days after that, on July 11th, 2003, I had to put my kids into, my grandkids, I had to bring them to DFACS, and they took them, and I was having problems. I'd just been divorced. The woman my second marriage crumbled. She started using pills and drinking and doing drugs behind my back, and she wanted a divorce after 5 car accidents in 1 year. And Johnny knew her. Some people knew her, but he used to chair the meetings every Saturday night at the Now Club, and I started thinking. There's a lot of things that led to me picking up again then. And, you know, they say even if your ass is falling off, get yourself to a meeting. And was feeling my job, everything around me, my divorce, you know, I didn't even want a divorce. She wanted a divorce after all that stuff. And I started thinking that maybe, yeah, I wasn't an alcoholic. I, you know, I was only 99% sure, not 100% sure. And my latest sponsor at the time, him and his wife went through a divorce, and I should have got another sponsor. I should have done a lot of things. But instead, I fractured my pelvis at work, and they couldn't find what was wrong with me. And the fourth doctor, the butt doctor? What's he called? A proctologist sent me to the hospital after he checked me out. My second wife was with me then, and when the proctologist was probing, and she was trying to be serious, and the doctor was serious, and I'm like, and they're like, all of a sudden they all started laughing. It was just hilarious to them. But they didn't find anything wrong. I had a fractured pelvis. And, you know, so that proctologist sends me to get my testicles, ultrasound done on my testicles. And I have a fractured pelvis, and they couldn't find it. But anyway, before I had the testicles probed by the... I had four beers before I had that fifth test done. And I thought, you know, I'll just drink, you know, just one time. And that led to 6 years and 10 months, 6 years and 10 months of drinking. After I started drinking again, July 11th, 2003, I drank all the way till June 24th, 2010. And I had another DUI, and I was sitting in jail in North Carolina, and that was my sixth and final, so far, hopefully last, DUI. And that's a long story. Officer Owl with Cherokee Police. I was half a mile from the hotel after driving from Chattanooga. I had charges in Chattanooga that I got dropped. It was amazing. And I was celebrating, I was the passenger. and I decided we didn't think we'd be that late. The sun was going down. That was still my second wife. She couldn't see at night. She had night blindness, so I had to drive the last 3 miles. Drove 2 miles. I was 1 mile from the hotel, and I got stopped by Officer Al. And anyway, I was 0.08 according to his, I was 0.06 according to his breathalyzer, but he wanted to bring me to the station and have me checked, and that was a 1974 machine, and it would definitely have showed I was over 0.08, and my lawyer that I called said, don't take that. But anyway, I was in jail for 6 hours, had to pay $1,000 to get out. When I was sitting in jail, I was thinking, this is so stupid. You know, I had 9 years, 6 months, 2 days sober, and I thought I had learned that I had a problem. So, anyway, that was 5 years ago in 2006, December 11th. I went another 3 years, 3.5 years of drinking after that incident, drinking and driving every day. Well, not every day, but it got to where I was drinking in the morning, you know. And that's another question on this thing. It says, you know, have you ever had an eye-opener? And I'm like, no, I've never had an eye-opener. Well, I didn't know that meant when you're waking up in the morning to get going. But I answered. Anyway, I got sober again June 24th, and I answered these questions as honestly as I could, and I could only come up with 4 out of the 12 that were probably yes, and the rest were definitely no's. And about 13 months ago, I looked at this again because I was thinking, you know, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. You know, after all this shit, this is, you know, this is maybe not even less than half of the crap that happened to me because of drinking. But anyway, I had to really look at this, and I can honestly answer yes, definitely, to all 12 of these. And this being honest with yourself is so hard, or it was so hard for me. I'm just speaking for myself and sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, before I started talking, I was going to say a prayer that God guides my tongue and my thinking and helps me to communicate intelligently. And, you know, I've come to have a God in my life now that is of my own choosing. Even during that 9 years, 6 months, and 2 days, I still had reflections on what the God, you know, in the Catholic Church and the God of the Bible. And through one of these tapes that I got from Damon, I think it's Sandy Beach, it's like, you know, choose your own conception of God. And I stopped the CD, and I had a paper and pen, and I started writing down like six qualities that I had for the God of my understanding. And I look at God as like a great parent that wants the best for me, you know. And that's if you're, you know, a parent, you know, my two daughters are 30 and 31 now, and I would do anything that I could to help them through any crisis. And anyway, I do believe that God wants the best for me. God, of course, is creative, the source of all love. The God of my understanding is fair. You know, I'm a Libra, so I like thinking that, you know, life's, man, I don't know about life being fair, but I'm sure God's fair. And that's a big thing for me, and helpful and just. The God of my understanding, this is something that God never was to me. He's comforting, and I feel comfortable with God. You know, not like where I'm in awe and scared to be anywhere near God. I feel that we all have a part of God in us, and we have qualities, not in the great percentage that God has, but like my best friend, and he has a sense of humor that's, you know, just beyond. I could go through so many hilarious things that have happened just in the last month. This neck injury thing is kind of funny. But God sees the big picture. You know, I was kind of thinking before where, you know, my perspective is so limited. You know, I can see, well, I can't hardly turn my head to the right. It's even more, my perspective is even worse now. And I've noticed that with driving especially. I'm like trying to look in my mirror on the right side. But anyway, I like the analogy with the chess, because I was always a great chess player. I was the renowned greatest chess player at the World Congress Center in the whole engineering department. I worked there over 10 years. And nobody could, you know, maybe one game out of four I'd lose against the best ones. But, you know, with 7 billion people on this planet and countless squares, God, it seems like he really does know just where each interaction, how I'm going to learn something, how other people are going to learn things. And I can see just glimpses of the big picture every now and then. I don't see the big picture. My perspective's too limited. And I feel, too, that, you know, if you limit the God in you, you limit God. There aren't any limitations except self-limitations. And booze definitely limited me. And with the help of God and faith and trust, you know, I'm sober. And there's nothing too big that God can't help you with. And I do pray often in the mornings. And I love starting off my day before I leave the house. I don't get out of bed. I have to, you know, and find out. I used to try that, there's no way I can pray like that. But after a couple cups of coffee and before I hit rush hour traffic and that, I definitely, it's a good practice I've gotten into. And I read a book on gratitude, and the highest form of prayer is gratitude. And just being grateful for, there's so many countless things to be grateful for. Clancy was talking on his tape I was listening to yesterday, and he had a blockage in one of his legs, and he couldn't walk, and he was, you know, that's a horrible thing not to be able to walk. And even Clancy, once he had that fixed and he could walk again, he felt like it was a miracle, and he was just so grateful. But within less than a month, he's like, forgot all about it. And, you know, it's just like a new car or a new girlfriend or whatever is new that you really enjoy, it loses its appeal. And so it has to be, for me, gratitude is something I try to integrate in my daily life. And I heard too, about 6 months ago, you know, if you want a quick get rich plan, list the top 30 things you're grateful for. And I thought, well, that's a great idea. And then about four and a half months after I heard that, I actually wrote down the 30 top things, you know, instead of just thinking, oh yeah, that's a good idea. But I wrote that down. It really had a big impact on me, because I do take so many things for granted, and I feel very much highly blessed with all the things in my life, and things have never gone as good as they are going for me now. I go to the Thursday night jail meetings, and I love that meeting. You know, I still hear people, I drink, and I'm going to drink again because I like having fun. And, you know, you get these looks, and, you know, I got to point out to these people that, you know, we all love to have fun. We're not a glum lot. You know, this is a great program, and to enjoy life and all the blessings that we have. If I'm drunk, I am not going to be enjoying it. I bought this for the first time, just busted. One time, I swear, I looked like this guy with the bloody face. That crazy girlfriend of mine had scratched me up, and the cops came and arrested me. And there was nothing wrong with her. And I'm all bloody and stuff. And I went into work after I got out of jail like that. But I can see myself. I don't know how many mug shots I have, but I had to buy one of these. It's a real good visual. I'm glad they don't make that magazine now. You know, they never did it that I know of when I was still using and drinking. But I'll try to wrap it up. It's almost 8 o'clock. I could go through each of the steps, but my favorite one by far that helped me the most, you know, after the admitting I'm powerless over alcohol, my life is unmanageable, which I do on a daily basis. I have no reservations on saying it, and I go to at least... This is my 494th meeting in 608 days sober now. And the third step was such the biggest freeing step for me. You know, after remembering I'm powerless, when I turn in my will and my life, I used to say, turning my will and my life over to the care of God. You know, that's a big ego thing. You know, and I just could not fathom that when I first was, you know, in 1994 into the present. You know, it's like, what a relief. You know, my will stinks. And I had three sponsors that were the same names as my brothers, Joe, Rick, and Jack, my first three sponsors. And none of them pointed out that they didn't want my life, they, you know, that my will was really horrible. But I came to that conclusion on my own. And I'm glad they didn't point it out, because I probably would have said, oh, the hell with you or something. But really, I was really at a horrible spot in my life then. And, well, things still crop up from time to time. And, fear, resentment, selfishness, dishonesty. I'm about out of time, so I'm just going to say my New Year's resolution for this year was, on page 149 and 12 and 12. Don't take myself so damn seriously. And just yesterday it occurred to me, because I do take things too seriously at times, you know, whether it's criticism from coworkers or, you know, but that's, to me, that's the same thing as ego. When I'm taking things too seriously, I keep thinking, oh, my ego is diminished. And then when I'm like not enjoying stuff and I'm seeing, you know, that I'm pissed off, you know, that I'm taking something way too serious. You know, in the big scheme of things, you know, who cares if, you know, like I was taking just speaking tonight too serious for a little while. I was like, well, most of you people I know really well, and I'm glad to have met you, and I'm glad that I had this opportunity. I want to thank everyone for listening, and I hope you got something out of what I said, but anyway, thank you. That was beautiful.